Whether you drive a car,
need a car,
or just occasionally bum a ride with friends,
you've come to the right place.
Join Jill and Tom as they break down everything that's going on in the auto world.
New car reviews,
shopping tips,
driving green,
electric cars,
classic cars,
and plenty of great guests.
This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, this is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom, she's Jill. Thank you for joining us. Happy 2025. When you get a chance, do me a solid, check us out at ConsumerGuide.com. Our list of 2025 best buys is sitting right there for you to peruse before you go out and do some car shopping. Plus, you want to check out our blog for fun stuff that I do when I don't actually want to do any work. That laugh was Jill Simonello. Jill, how you doing?
I'm doing all right.
All right. You're a North American Car of the Year juror and managing editor of Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk.
Yes.
Okay. And a freelancer.
Yes.
A lot of stuff.
I would say, like, maybe instead of saying freelancer, say I'm a contract writer. I think that sounds better.
I can say whatever you want me to say.
I put my words up for sale.
I remember between jobs way, way, way back when in the 90s, I was in market research at the time, and I would go places and do relatively menial stuff. And there was someone I ran into a couple of times at a couple of places who kept referring to her work as freelancing. And I'm like, you're temping. Let's just be honest about this.
Yeah, you know.
All right. I have to, Happy New Year.
Yes, Happy New Year. This is the first time we're seeing each other since January 1st.
Yeah, I got to get some stuff out here. It's all self-promotion, but I do have to promote it. Tomorrow in the morning, the Nick D podcast drops. Nick D podcast. I'm on that. We had a good talk about some old ads.
Okay.
Some fun stuff. Tomorrow at
noon 30.
So people who get to this podcast pretty early, because it usually drops late Monday night.
So half 12.
Half 12. Or noon 30, as the kids say.
Okay.
I'm on the John Williams show, the WGN Business Lunch. I think we're going to be talking about the year in review.
Okay.
Probably talking a little bit of Tesla. Probably talking a little bit about tariffs. So that'll be a good show. It's 12:30 p.m. Chicago time on WGN Radio in Chicago. And then Wednesday.
Okay.
You can't guess this.
Okay.
You can't guess this. This is fun. I'm going to appear.
Fun?
No, yeah.
I would never guess fun for you.
I'm going to appear with Nick DiGilio at the Lake Street Theater in Oak Park, Illinois.
Okay.
Nick is screening Blue Collar, 1978 films by Paul Schrader about United Auto Workers and the strike and United Auto Workers breaking bad.
Okay.
So I'm going to talk a little bit about, after the movie, we're going to talk a little bit about the conditions at the time.
Got it, because you were alive at that time.
I was alive at that time, and I was not paying attention, but it was not as easy to be an auto worker in 1978 as it is now. They were not as well compensated. The plants were more dangerous, and people were just generally unhappy.
Yeah.
So that's that. That's all my self-promotion.
Okay.
All right. What do you got?
I'm heading to the Detroit Auto Show this week, and
you're going
to
go.
Yes, so I'm on the, as you noted, I'm on the North American Car of the Year jury.
So I guess you kind of got to go.
I kind of got to go because we're announcing our big awards, and I will be part of the awards presentation.
Oh,
yes.
Do you wear like a uniform?
I have a pin.
A pin.
I have a pin.
No one can see that from the audience.
Sure, they can.
Can they?
They will zoom in on it. It's a nice little round button.
Okay.
But no, so we will announce the car, truck, and utility of the year on Friday.
I'd never mean to besmirch an auto show, but it looks like the news is going to be light out of Detroit.
Well, so you and I have had this ongoing conversation.
People should still go. There just won't be news.
We've had this ongoing conversation for the past couple of years now. The importance of the auto show isn't necessarily, you know, wining and dining journalists like it used to be.
Right.
It's the
consumers. Have seen that today on Facebook. There's a limited access Facebook group where people are complaining about the lack of lack of accommodations for journalists.
And I'm just like, get over it.
Get over yourself.
Yeah, get over it. And
you know what? Go there and cover the show.
Yeah, go and, I don't know, do your job. So, full disclosure, I will get reimbursed for my room by the North American Car of the Year jury.
Uh-huh. I don't think that's shocking.
But I'm going to drive up and then I'll drive back and I am going to cover the show. I am actually going to do my job.
That's the thing. People used to cover the show. You used to walk around the show and you could make observations and you'd see 300 cars in one place.
Mm-hmm.
Or I think the Chicago Auto Show has boasted as many as 1,000 cars on the floor.
Yeah.
Insanity.
Insanity.
So, yeah, so that's coming up, the Detroit Auto Show. It is back in its original January schedule slot.
Yeah.
Again, getting its nose bloodied somewhat by CES just before it.
Yeah.
So because they kind of divide up the journalist pool.
Yeah.
But so what? Go see the cars.
Yeah.
Speaking of going to see the cars and the nicest venue you can go to an auto show, the Chicago Auto Show is coming up.
Yes.
I have the date somewhere. I should have this handier. February 8th.
Yep.
So people want to check that out.
Is February 8th the media day, or is that the day that opens?
I believe that is the day it opens.
Okay, because I know, so that's Saturday. So then that would be 7th is going to be the first look for charity.
Yeah.
And then, this is my favorite part, on February 9th.
Oh, this involves running.
It does involve running. They do an indoor race, and it's called Miles Per Hour.
Uh-huh.
And it's a collaboration between the Chicago Area Runners Association and the Chicago Automobile Trade Association.
Uh-huh.
And it's literally, how many miles can you run in an hour? Because they have a limited amount of time, so it's not like, okay, go run a 5K.
That entire event is filled with people who need a hobby.
That is the hobby. And
like watching TV. That's a good hobby.
Both of my hobbies are coming together. I wouldn't call automotive a hobby, but both of my favorite things are coming together. I love cars. I love running, and I get to do them both at the same time.
Ugh.
It just makes me so happy.
All right, we're this far. How do people register to do this?
You can register. The website is milesperhour.com.
Uh-huh.
Or you can go to the Cara Runs, CARARUNS.com. I think it's .com. It could be .org website. And there will be links to registration.
You do have to register. It costs a little bit of money, but there's cool swag.
Yeah, so you get a t-shirt. You'll get a real medal. Like the first couple of years, it was kind of a plastic flimsy thing, but now you actually get a real medal.
Oh.
And I will say,
Jill can sign your medal.
You could beat me. I will be there. You could meet me. If you're going to be there, find me on Blue Sky or Twitter or one of my other social media, and let me know you're going to be there. I will come and say hello to you.
Meet Jill Simonello is only slightly funnier than meet Tom Appel in my mind.
I don't know. I think I'm pretty cool, darn it. And I will wear funny tights. I don't know which funny tights I will wear.
Maybe, I will too.
Maybe with unicorns, or you know what? In honor of the show, I'm going to wear tights with donuts on them.
There you go.
Yeah. So that's how you will be able to find me, is I will be wearing funny tights with donuts on them.
Was that the first time I said, there you go?
Yep, I think it was.
I'm going to try to limit myself to 3 or 4 a show.
Okay. Do you want to ask me how I am again?
No.
Okay.
Not yet.
No.
News stories I want to blast through here real quick. We will talk about this one again later. Congestion fee for Manhattan.
Oh,
have you heard of this?
Yes, I have.
They've tried this before. It didn't work. They're talking about a $9 fee for lower Manhattan. The idea here is if you have to pay a fee, a toll, to get into Manhattan, you may not go, which will lighten congestion.
That would be amazing.
There are no green motives here, obviously, but this is working in European cities where the motives are, in fact, green and congestion.
Yeah.
So they want you to, you can only come in with an electric vehicle, or you have to pay a hefty toll.
Yeah.
Depending on the city. Some cities are EV only.
So New York is, you have to pay the toll no matter what, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, and I think it's like $9?
$9.
Yeah.
That's what they're talking about. I don't know how this is going to be implemented. Will it be stickers on your butt, on your bumper?
On your butt?
Well, that's for runners. That's for runners.
I don't know. I don't think that there is going to be a congestion fee for runners. I'm just going to put that out there.
All right. So that's coming up. We don't know all the details yet. I read like 3 stories, and the details were limited.
Yeah.
And after that, I got bored. Tesla sales fell for the first time globally ever.
Womp womp.
They had been growing and growing and growing.
Yeah.
And we can decide later what's driving a decline in Tesla sales, but the lineup is dated. We've talked about that.
Yep.
And Musk keeps insisting it's not dated. We update stuff every year a little bit.
They do.
But they don't look new.
No, they don't look new. And the other part of the story is there are so many other great competitors coming out. You know, Tesla used to be the only game in town, and now they are not.
The other thing, too, is Tesla's talking about bringing out a cheaper version of what is probably the Model Y, under $30,000. But they're already discounting the Model Y a lot.
Yeah.
I think people may be disappointed with whatever comes out underneath that, if they can do it.
And this is me holding my breath.
Yeah. We'll see. Because the Mexico plant where they were going to build cheap cars, not happening.
I'm letting out my breath now.
Yeah.
But I will say we've heard this story before, and
we have.
Yeah.
We have. And right now, Elon Musk is trying to play 2 different stories to try to keep stockholders interested. One is the robo-taxi, which is nowhere near happening. Not this year, not before 2030. They don't have the technology yet. No one has the AV technology to make that work yet.
I mean, I will say Waymo is doing a fairly good job of making it work in southern states.
Yeah.
But the problem is weather in the northern states.
That's exactly the problem.
And so even when you do roll something
fog
out like this, like it's still not going to be where you and I live. It's not going to be in Chicago, not for many years.
No, no. And the problem is, too, this happened with Cruise, which is now gone. Cruise is now just a division of General Motors working on their semi-autonomous stuff like Super Cruise. Is that they were actually pretty far along and considered the number two and sometimes the number one AV manufacturer, but then they had a horrible accident and they never recovered from it.
Yeah.
Now, there was some bungling on GM's part about how they reported this, and they were apparently dishonest at some point in the process. So that was bad, but it killed a company that was once considered to be worth billions of dollars.
Yeah.
It's gone.
Yeah. You know, I would be curious if we could get somebody from Waymo like on the show
to talk
about it. I will reach out to our friend John Krafcek, who used to be the CEO at Waymo, and see
and
if he has.
And he's a runner.
And he is a runner. I don't think he's running anymore, though.
Good.
I think he's biking.
Yeah.
But I will reach out to him and see if he has any suggestions or if he would be interested in coming on.
One of the problems with autonomous vehicles is that there is no midpoint to make money.
Yeah.
They either work or they don't.
Yeah.
You don't roll it out gradually. And then they're trying. I mean, they're rolling it out in terms of working as cabs, but most of them still have to have drivers in them. Anyway, enough of that. The thing about Tesla, also, they don't really have a three-row crossover. They don't even have something like a mid-size crossover.
Yeah, they have a fake.
Yeah, so they have these gaps in the lineup, which you think they would fill.
Yeah.
But they're not doing that. Mm. All right. Also, probably political backlash there. Not probably. There certainly is. And competition, as you mentioned. All right, this story is probably something you know, but I just read today as poking around. GM killed its light-duty diesel. So the Duramax 3-liter diesel that used to show up in the Escalade, the Silverado, and the Sierra, and the Yukon XL, gone.
Yep.
That's the last of the light-duty diesels, and I think there is no non-truck diesel you can buy in the U.S. anymore.
Well, I know. And
I'm positive.
I haven't driven it yet, but I feel like, I mean, and it depends on what you consider truck, because I believe Tahoe, Suburban, SUVs still have.
Nope, that's gone. Production ended late last year.
Hmm.
That's gone.
Because I feel like my boss just drove one with a diesel.
Interesting. We'll have to check.
I read
a press release about the death of that engine. If that's wrong, we'll have to correct that.
Yeah. We'll hopefully be talking about some other diesel news later in the show, but I don't usually drive diesels, so because I stick to lighter duty, smaller SUV type stuff for the testing that I do.
Yeah, and for all the discussion of movement to EVs, to electric vehicles, diesels are not going to be replaced in 3/4 ton and 1 ton trucks. They're just incredibly practical and surprisingly efficient doing heavy work.
Yeah. I mean, for towing, for payload, that kind of stuff.
So we're talking about the Duramax, the Power Stroke, and the Cummins diesels that you can get in the big trucks. They're very well suited for what they do.
Mm-hmm.
They're also shockingly expensive. They add like 10 grand to the price of those vehicles.
Yeah, they do.
But you get that money back when you sell it, so.
Yeah, you get the money back, and you will, I think over the long haul, pay less in fuel. I mean, depending on fuel prices, but.
Here's the funny thing, right? We were talking about electric vehicles and towing, and how when an electric vehicle tows about 5,000 pounds, its range is cut in half.
Mm-hmm.
If you are towing with like a Chevy Silverado 2500 with the Duramax diesel, you normally get about 15 miles per gallon. And then if you put 20,000 pounds behind it and go driving, you get about 15 miles per gallon.
Yeah, it's
the resiliency and just those engines are just they're amazing. All three of them.
Yeah.
I know people have their favorites. I think the Ford might be the quietest right now. The Cummins is still the loudest.
But Power Stroke is pretty awesome.
I haven't had that much experience with them in recent years. All right. We should talk about the Nissan Kicks.
Yes.
Redesigned for 2025. You and I really, we agree on this completely.
Yeah.
The previous generation Kicks, which was small
and
maybe a little bit light on refinement, NVH, noise, vibration, and harshness, an incredible bargain.
Yes.
And you could get one for as little as like 23, 24 grand. It was a small crossover, room for four, really room for two with some room for people in the back.
But people good my mileage, size in the back.
Yeah, good mileage, high tech, a lot of tech in there. Everything about this car was likable. Great first car.
Mm-hmm.
Selling okay. In 2023, they did 70,000 units.
Mm-hmm.
That's volume.
Yep.
but not big volume. And one of the problems is that I think the backseat space might have been a problem. The NVH might have been a problem. And I pointed all this out in a review I just finished before we came here.
Okay.
And then power.
Yeah.
And the big one, because we're not in a smile state, no all-wheel drive.
Yeah, right.
All these things.
Yeah.
Fixed. Or improved for 2025. So there's an all-new Kicks.
Mm-hmm.
It is a little bigger.
Mm-hmm.
A little more powerful,
mm-hmm.
a little nicer inside, more stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The price, surprisingly, at the lower end has not gone up much.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
You know, I think you and I both drove the same vehicle, an SR trim, like the burgundy maroonish shade.
Yeah, scarlet red with super black.
Yes.
The super black two-tone roof.
So first off, I want to say I think this is a handsome vehicle. I think it has a nice upright stance. It has, you know, very SUV-like look to it, which is attractive.
I'm cutting you off already, but I think that that matters. The fact that it looks more like a crossover is probably going to help move the metal.
Yeah, and I'll be honest with you. The Nissan Kicks, the previous generation, was one of my favorite vehicles for the price. Like, I thought it was a great bargain, and I loved it. And then driving this new 2025 model, I love it more.
Yeah, I wish the power mattered a little more. It went from a 1.5 to a 2-liter engine, but mm-hmm. it did gain some weight.
Yeah.
So it went from 122 horsepower, I think, to 141 horsepower. You don't feel the power too much. It's fine.
Yeah, it's fine.
And it's geared for around town quickness.
It is.
So it moves off from a light pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And if you need to get from 20 to 40 miles per hour, it does that pretty well. Where it runs out of steam is like trying to get up on the highway speed.
Yeah, so highway speeds, passing. You know, you're definitely going to have to floor it a little bit. And I drove this to and from Indianapolis. I had it over Christmas. And
do you remember what your mileage was?
No.
I was wondering if he broke 30.
I don't know. It was me and my husband, and we had all of our luggage, Christmas presents, all that kind of stuff. So we it was Santa's sleigh for a day. We loaded it up.
Good color for that job.
It was a great color for that job. And I will say, under 70 miles per hour, you really don't hear a lot of the road noise or, you know, the exterior like tire noise creeping into the cabin, but as soon as you go over 70 miles an hour, it gets a little loud.
That is a magic line in the sand for a lot of things, about 70 miles an hour.
Yeah.
It's where EVs become especially inefficient.
Mm-hmm.
It's where gasoline engines start to become inefficient, maybe mm-hmm. more like 75 miles an hour. But road noise and wind noise really start to pick up then, and aerodynamics matter.
Yeah, yeah.
That's just a law of nature we can't fix. But The old Kicks was pretty loud on the highway.
Mm-hmm.
If it had a real flaw, that might have been it.
Right.
And that engine kind of made unpleasant noises. The new 2 liter is a little quieter. But now on the highway, it's still probably among the noisier vehicles in the class, but I wouldn't call it something you can complain about anymore.
No. I mean, there was one stretch of the highway. If anybody is familiar with the stretch between Chicago and Indianapolis, there's... Only me.
Yeah.
There's a stretch of I-65 by Fair Oak Farms that has... And there's signs saying it, road noise, and it's literally like like these little bumps in the highway. And we get to that point, and I'm always like, do I have a flat tire? And I'm always like, no, we're by Fair Oak Farms, got it. And that was particularly loud in this vehicle.
I hate to quote other people's reviews, but I read a few of those before I wrote my own. And one of the things about the SR versus the SV, the SR is the top trim level.
Mm-hmm.
The SV is significantly less expensive. That's the mid-trim level, and it's probably your value play in this case. That has 17-inch wheels and tires. The SR has 19s.
Mm.
I think those wheel and tires may contribute a little bit to noise and to that thumping you were just enjoying.
I hear that in every vehicle, but it was particularly not good in the...
So if there's a downside here, it might be fuel economy. The vehicle did gain weight. It got more power.
Mm-hmm.
And I only saw about 28 mpg. I used to see more like 30, 31 in these vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the trade-off is significant.
Yeah, all-wheel drive.
Well, and you're right. I'm sorry. I should have said that.
All-wheel drive.
This is an all-wheel drive vehicle. Also, as long as you mention all-wheel drive only adds $1,500.
Yeah.
You will get all of that, maybe more, back when you resell the vehicle. That's the thing to remember about all-wheel drive. It may cost you an MPG.
Yeah.
One, maybe.
Yeah.
Depending on how it's set up. And this is not an especially sophisticated system.
Well, it also depends on how you drive.
It depends how you drive, too. But you will get your all-wheel drive money back at resale time, especially if they don't have to move the vehicle. Like, we live in Chicago. Something like 80% of the vehicles sold around here, I think, are all-wheel drive now.
Yeah.
So, but nice vehicle. Just real quick, available in S, SV, and SR trim. Starts at 23,220 for the base car, 25 grand roughly for the SR, and 27,574. I'm sorry, that was for the SV. 27,570 for the SR. The SR is much more expensive this year, but it comes with things like LED headlights, and a premium stereo and stuff like that.
Yeah, and I would say as tested, because I don't know if the vehicle we were driving had any options, but I remember it was right around $28,000.
Okay, for some reason I thought it was loaded up more, and I put some options on there. But yeah, the base price is still very attractive.
Yeah.
The only thing to think about then is you want to look at the Chevy Trax.
Yes.
Very similarly priced, not available with all-wheel drive, more room for people, maybe a little bit better ride and handling. They're very competitive vehicles.
Yeah, I would agree. And it was funny because I sent a friend recently out to go drive the Kicks and the Trax because she was looking for a new car. I don't know if she ever got to the Kicks, but she bought the Trax.
Well, there you go. And then if you have two extra grand to spend, look at the Buick Envista.
Yep.
Ridiculously affordable for a Buick.
Yes.
And basically the same car as the Trax.
Yes.
Quieter, nicer interior.
Does Envista have all-wheel drive?
No.
Okay.
You got to go up to the Encore GX.
Got it.
Yeah. So same drawback.
Okay. Yeah. Right. I haven't driven the Envista yet.
We're going to be talking with the folks from Consumer Reports in a moment.
Yes.
Mike Quincy joins us to talk about most reliable brands.
Yes.
And there's been an upset.
Yes.
Big deal.
It's a big deal.
All right, we'll be right back.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com. Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
We are back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom. She's Jill. Jill, for the second time today, how are you doing?
I think I'm doing good.
Are you enjoying the
I'm
new year?
I'm doing well. You know what? I am enjoying the new year.
I've been one of the nice things about my daughter moving home is that we're watching movies together again, and we just watched Being John Malkovich. And if you want a movie that will keep you puzzled for weeks after you saw it, that's a great movie.
Yeah, I don't.
It's
want
insane.
That.
No, it's very entertaining. Very strange. Very entertaining.
Okay.
I actually don't know why John Malkovich would have agreed to do that movie. It's very self-mocking. Good of him to do it. All right. Anyway, no big deal. Throw me a bone here.
You want to talk about social media?
Just briefly.
Just briefly. You're on a couple of them.
I'm Car Guy Tom on Twitter, X, and I'm Blue Sky.
Yes.
And I went kicking and screaming on the Blue Sky, but I'm there now.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Steve King, for forcing me to do that. But yeah, you can follow me in both places. I am finding the car conversation on Blue Sky satisfying.
Me too.
A lot of good people have moved over there that we knew from Twitter, which is nice.
Yes. And I want to say, like, I know we've probably said this before, but Blue Sky to me is like Twitter was like 15 years ago.
Yeah. And you know what? I like to have a conversation about Tesla that doesn't immediately become hyper political.
Yeah.
Obviously, it has to be a little political. There's no way to avoid it.
Right.
But it's nice that it isn't. Necessarily.
And then you don't get, like, attacked by the Teslarati immediately.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, as you know, like, I got badly beat up because I said the wheel covers on the Cybertruck were ugly. Which, by the way, they are.
You're sticking to that, are you?
Yeah. Nothing about that was political.
So, Car Guy Tom on X as well.
Yes.
If you want to take an issue with that, you can find him on Twitter.
All right.
X.
Car reliability is a big deal.
Yes.
And brands really, really take pride in the reliability if they have it.
Yes.
And there's been something of an upset.
Yes.
After years of understanding that Toyota and Lexus were making the best cars, out of nowhere came Subaru.
Yeah.
Not out of nowhere. Not out of nowhere because many, many car journalists own Subaru.
Yes.
So we're inside and we know this. But on the phone with us is Mike Quincy of Consumer Reports, and he can tell us the story of a report they just put together. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. How are you guys?
We are good. I'm speaking for Jill here. We are good. I asked her twice. She said she was good. Tell us a little bit about Consumer Reports, and then tell us about this excellent study.
Wow. Well, Consumer Reports has been testing products and informing the public about safety and other important items since 1936.
Wow.
And we have a very robust automotive test program. We have a 327-acre test facility here in Connecticut. That's where I work. And we buy all of the products that we test. We don't take any advertising. And we try to just kind of tell the truth about cars. And it's a lot of fun and excited to always get on any kind of podcast or radio interview, TV interview, and talk about it.
Yeah, one of the cool things I think about Consumer Reports is that we're talking about brands today, and you guys have a great brand. I think everyone trusts Consumer Reports.
Yep.
No, I think that that's very kind of you to say, and I really appreciate it. And we're very careful about that, and I think it is. Back in the day when we just had print publications, there was a limited number of opinions or writers that you might follow. And now with the internet, there's just a bajillion of them. So it does make it harder to know who to trust and where to go to get straightforward information. And I'm really proud to work for an organization that is considered one of the trusted sources.
Yeah, you should be. It's very cool. So tell us about this study and the news here that Subaru is the most reliable car brand.
Yeah, I was listening to your intro, and you said, like, Subaru came out of nowhere. And I'm like, dude, I'm in the Northeast. Subaru has been around for a long time.
They're in Colorado. I was in Colorado a few
Pacific
years ago.
Northwest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was turning left someplace near Denver. And in line were four green Foresters, same year, same trim level, same color. Like, they dominate. They dominate in that market.
So I think what's interesting about Subaru is they kind of know who they are, and they're not trying to be something that they're not. I mean, their little foray into EVs notwithstanding. But I mean, they're like, we're mostly an all-weather kind of company. They go out of their way to make sure they're, like, really pet-friendly. If you look at it, you go and configure a Subaru on their website, and you go to, like, the accessories tab after you've built your little car, and there's a bajillion pet things. So that's kind of a unique little niche for them, and they're like, they're going to sell you racks to put your mountain bikes on, your skis, and everything like that. But along with all of that good stuff that kind of shows how people use their cars, Consumer Reports, we looked at the overall score of all the brands, including Subaru, and that includes the road test score, reliability and odor satisfaction surveys, as well as safety information. And, lo and behold, Subaru came out on top. Now, that isn't to say that Lexus and Toyota still aren't among the top, because, Lexus and Toyota finished 2 and 3 in our overall brand reliability score. So it's not like that other Japanese brand is going away anytime soon.
Well, so can we dig into that a little bit? Because I want to talk about what knocked Toyota off of the top spot, because they've had a couple of things. They've had a couple things happen lately, and I'm just wondering if you can talk about that a little bit and how much that played into them losing their number one spot.
Sure. I think Toyota has done a great job, I'm going to say, over the last 30, 40 years of making top-shelf reliable models. And that's because they generally focus on one plan of attack. And by that, I mean, like 25 years ago, they said, we're doing hybrids. And that's where we're not, as you guys know, they were, real reluctant to get into all EVs. They didn't really do the diesel thing.
Right.
So they just said hybrid. So they refined their technology, and they made it better and better and better and better. And you think about a Toyota Prius, it is a pretty complex car. I mean, the hybrid system, the batteries, the electric motors working in conjunction with the internal combustion engine and all that stuff. And they do, and the Toyota hybrids have been amazingly reliable, again, for such a complex car. But they've introduced a few new designs lately. Their Tacoma, the Tundra, the BZ4X electric vehicle has had some issues, which is kind of uncharacteristic of Toyota. And the biggest surprise, I think, was the Lexus RX, which is their luxury SUV, came out to be just average. Now, there are some car companies on our list that would kill to have average. But for Toyota, it really is kind of a step backwards. But Toyota is very responsive. They understand when there's got some problems. They go back and they fix them. And, I suspect that the Toyota and Lexus will definitely not be dropping out of the top five next year.
Tell us a little bit about the RX, because that is not only a groundbreaking car, it is a bread-and-butter vehicle for Lexus. But the RX was the first kind of premium crossover, and it sold very well for a very long time. And now it's got to be the best-selling Lexus still, although the TX is probably, that's the three-row version, probably chewing into that. But what is it about that vehicle that caused it to slip?
Well, they did change up the powertrain somewhat, and they also had some electrical issues as well. So that was, you know, it's a relatively new design, and yeah, I'm with you on what a groundbreaking vehicle that the RX is. I was working in the Yonkers headquarters of Consumer Reports back in the 90s when it debuted. And, you know, first of all, it's like, what is an SUV? And then what's a luxury SUV?
Right.
You know, they went from taking something like a Jeep, which was like a truck-based crude platform, and they put it on a car-based platform, and they made the interior nice, and again, they made it drop-dead reliable. And it's they have stuck with that formula. And, you know, right now, the RX is average. We'll see what next year's survey brings.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about the methodology. How do we know that these vehicles are reliable, or how do you guys know that they're reliable? And then maybe just walk us down the list a little bit.
Sure. Well, every year, Consumer Reports asks its members about potential problems that they've had with their vehicle in the previous 12 months. And, you know, most people can look at that survey and say, oh, yeah, I brought the car in for an unscheduled service for this, or there were squeaks and rattles, or there was whatever. The survey covers about 20 problem areas, including, like, the engine, the electric motors, which we're seeing, you know, a lot more in vehicles, whether they're EVs or plug-in hybrids, transmission, in-car electronics, and whatnot. And we look at that information, and that helps us to build a case for a car's predicted reliability. And to get that, we're looking at the car's reliability average over the last three model years, assuming that it hasn't been redesigned. This year, we got we got information on over 300,000 vehicles from the years 2000 to 2024. It's hard to believe it's been that long.
Yeah.
And so it really is one of the more comprehensive reliability surveys out there.
I'm looking at the list here, and I'm going down the list. And Subaru, we know about, Lexus, Toyota, and then Honda Acura, no surprises. Long-term understood right. to be reliable. I am a little stunned to see Audi so high on the list.
Again, they have a pretty old product line, and I don't mean that in a disparaging or mean
right.
way, because the older models tend to be the most reliable. I mean, the Toyota is just coming out with a redesigned 4Runner. But the last generation 4Runner lasted, what, like, you know, 10, 15 years or something like
right,
that?
Right.
And it was among the most reliable cars in our survey. So give Audi some credit for, you know, kind of sticking with pretty simple powertrains for their A3 and their A4, and how that carries over into their SUVs. Nothing is super duper radical going on in there, and that's, you know, that's in contrast to let's bring in a counter to all that, like General Motors. I mean, we talked about 20 years ago, 25 years ago, Toyota really focused on hybrids. Well, 25 years ago, General Motors, like, we're going to do diesels. No, we're going to do hybrid. No, we're going to do plug-in hybrid. No, we're going to go with this V8. You know, in other words, they kept reinventing themselves, which helps them, you know, have to. It makes it harder to really get a good, solid powertrain that you worked all the bugs out of. I mean, it's like every year they're coming out with something new, and they're trying something new, which might get you headlines, but it probably makes the product planners a little crazy, because they can't work out the bugs of one problem before they start a whole new platform.
On the bottom of the list that you guys put together, and there are some brands you guys didn't have enough information for. We could talk about that in a moment. But Rivian, way down on the bottom, what happened to them? I sort of have like a rooting interest in Rivian. You know, I like startups, and they seem to make a very intriguing product, but quality is an issue.
It certainly is an issue, and it gives you an idea of just how hard it is to start a car manufacturer.
I mean, we say that all the time.
To become a new car company is really tough, and to learn the ins and outs of mass production is not a simple process. And while Rivian does have some intriguing products, and they certainly have a look to them, they have a long way to go to work out the reliability issues. And, I mean, you might recall many years ago, General Motors started that little company called Saturn.
Uh-huh.
You know, Saturn was backed by billions and billions of dollars, and General Motors finally just pulled the plug on it. So, you know, imagine not having the nearly endless reserves of money if you're Rivian to try to do a startup. I mean, even General Motors gave up.
Yeah.
Yeah, Rivian's got some money now, though, so we'll see how that goes.
Over the last, 40 years, we've seen a real reduction of brands, and maybe that kind of contraction was something that was inevitable. How could the U.S. market, support all of them? However, with that in mind, there are fewer options for consumers. I mean, the more brands there, the more products there, the more competition there is, the more competitive, in theory, pricing can be. So I'm happy to see Rivian. I'm happy to see, if VinFast can make a go of it. It's going to be interesting to see what the Chinese manufacturers may or may not be bringing to the U.S. market. They've been talking about that for a long time. So the more variety for consumers really is a good thing. So I guess I'm with you on rooting for Rivian. However, I'm not really allowed to root for any car.
Understood. Nor am I, technically. I am a journalist, sort of,
right?
Yeah.
Before we wrap up, one other thing I wanted to just kind of get your thoughts on a little bit is the study also looked at hybrid EV and PHEV reliability. And, the study says that hybrid reliability is strong and EV and PHEV reliability is improving. So I was just wondering if you could talk a little bit about what that means.
Yeah, well, what that means is kind of, supporting the argument that I've been making all along, in that when you have an established technology and you refine it and you make it better and you work out the problems, your reliability tends to get better. So with hybrids, and we're talking about manufacturers that have a lot of experience, Honda, Hyundai, Kia, Lexus, Toyota, have been building hybrids a long time, and they do it quite well. Sales for hybrids compared to last year up 53%. On the other hand, EVs are still a relatively new propulsion system in the automotive field when you're looking in comparison with internal combustion. They're looking at 42% more problems than a regular gas engine, which is down from 79% last year. But they still have a ways to go. And that was always kind of a weird argument, because they said, well, there's not as many, moving parts, and there's, it should be simpler, but no, they're definitely having issues with batteries and holding charges and whether or not I could even take a charge. And so that technology is still in its infancy. You're marrying the two, you're doing EV propulsion as well as internal combustion with the plug-in hybrids, and these have less time in development. We're seeing 70% more problems compared to internal combustion, which is also down from 146% from last year. So it is getting better, but you think about legacy manufacturers and legacy products, and I talked about Toyota and the Prius and whatnot, and they still have the market cornered on top-notch reliability.
Excellent. Mike, we just scratched the surface of this, but we ran out of time. How can people find out more about this survey, this report, and consumer reports in general?
Well, go to consumerreports.org. We're a .org, not a .com, because we're a nonprofit organization. And believe it or not, we still do make some print publications. So when you're standing in line, checking out the grocery store, wow, a magazine, what's that? Consumer Reports still does sell magazines. But most of we're going all digital like everybody else and not doing as many print publications. But check out consumerreports.org. Become a member. The members sustain our business. It allows us to buy cars and keep the maintenance going for our test track out here in Connecticut. And we just really appreciate everybody's support.
Well, we appreciate you guys keeping the industry honest. It's great stuff, Mike. We hope we can have you back on sometime.
I love it. Thanks so much. And Jill, say hi to Tim for me.
I will do that.
All right. That was Mike Quincy with Consumer Reports. We're going to take a break. And when we come back.
Oh, quiz time.
Yeah.
Sorry, I got distracted.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com.
Welcome.
Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
We are back. This is the Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom. She's Jill. And this is the longest segment of the program when Jill tells us about her social media activity.
Oh, come on. It's not that long.
Go.
I've abbreviated. I'm on all the things.
All right. That was 6 seconds. Nice. Nice.
Well, you can find me at Jill Simonello, and I use the hashtag CarDuJour, and that's TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, LinkedIn, all the things. All the things.
Our Blue Sky contest.
Yes, Blue Sky.
It's going slowly.
Yeah.
I've got 278 followers now. You have 238, I think.
Okay.
I'm maintaining my 40-follower lead.
You were trying for a 50-follower lead, so I'm going to say your lead is shrinking, my
sure.
friend.
Sure.
It's shrinking.
Whatever makes
Go
you feel
Go back and
better.
Listen to the old episodes. You were like, yeah, as long as I maintain a 50-person lead. So all I'm going to say is, yeah, shrinking. It is shrinking.
At this particular rate of lead contraction, I'm going to win.
Maybe not, because at this particular point, like, I could get a nice little bump.
Maybe.
You never know.
Maybe you could.
You never know. You know, before we go on to the quiz.
I've gotten emails. People like me better than you, so
no, they
I
don't.
Should. I think that's true.
The actual public reviews mention me and how much they like me. So I'm just going to put that out there for you.
I think it's because they worry about your feelings.
Because I'm a fragile flower?
Yes.
A fragile.
Yes.
A fragile flower. I did want to issue one quick correction.
Okay.
For the beginning of the show, I was talking about the run, the miles per hour run.
Oh,
during
good.
The Chicago
We're talking about
Auto
running
show.
Again.
We are. Because, oh, I could also tell you I signed up for a half marathon in May. So you're going to have a whole bunch of running talk coming up.
No.
Yeah.
No.
It's very exciting. But at any rate, I wanted to say the website is actually kararuns.org and then it's like /miles per hour. So it's not, I think I said earlier it was milesperhour.com or milesperhour.org, but you have to go to the Kara website to get to the race entry.
I'm sorry, what?
And I bet you could probably also do it from the Chicago Auto Show website.
At which people should check out.
Yeah.
Just so you know, every time you talk about running, I get 3 minutes each to talk about Gunsmoke and Adam 12.
I think that over the past 3 or 4 years, I have a lot of time to make up for. So I think you have another 3 or 4 years before you get to go back to that.
By the way, and this is not revenge, on Blue Sky, I've been talking about Adam 12.
Okay.
And I've talked about this on air.
Mm-hmm.
What a fantastic document to the car culture in LA at the time. And I'm finding cars that I'm only seeing part of in scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And dang it, if people on Blue Sky can't identify these cars.
Oh, yeah. There's
it's
a lot
so
of good
cool.
car
yeah,
spotters out there.
They really are. They're great. So this is a lot of fun. All right. It is quiz time. Did you finish the social media thing?
I did, but I do have a car spotter to post for you.
Oh.
When I was in Indianapolis last week for visiting my mom for New Year's, I saw my very first in real life on the road, not driven by a media person, Ineos Grenadier.
Really?
Yeah.
I have not seen one yet.
Yeah.
And what's the pickup? The quartermaster. Haven't seen either. I have, but I saw them at events.
So what's really interesting is Chicago has a dealership for Ineos. So I'm betting money that the person down in Indianapolis who has that car bought it up here in Chicago.
Maybe. Oh, darn. I had a question for Mr. Quincy, and I forgot it.
Okay.
I wanted to know about Rivian, the Rivian experience, and getting those cars fixed.
Mm.
Because they do not have a traditional dealer network.
So maybe we need to get somebody from Rivian on to talk about that.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. Oh, my phone is ringing.
Call from.
There we go. I'm just going to do that.
Scam likely.
Yeah, spam likely. Which a good friend of mine.
Okay, good. Scam likely.
Yeah.
Got it. All right. So I think we can get into the quiz now.
All right. Are you ready?
I
went for the first of the year.
Okay.
Not the first show of the year. I went super simple.
I doubt that.
No, I did. Super simple. You ready?
Okay. Super simple does not mean super easy. Let's be clear.
No. May not be easy. It might be hard.
Yeah.
But it is simple.
Okay.
We've done this before. It's a great topic. Are you ready?
Are you going to make me answer in 60 seconds or less?
No. Simple. It's simple. Jill, which is longer?
Crate.
Are you ready?
Okay.
Just which is longer?
Okay.
The 2025 Nissan Altima.
Okay.
Or the 2025 Nissan Pathfinder. So mid-size sedan, mid-size crossover.
So the obvious answer would be the Pathfinder is longer.
Is that obvious?
I think that's obvious.
All right.
Because the Pathfinder is a three-row SUV, whereas the Altima is just a sedan. But you're sneaky, and I could see the Altima being longer but I'm going to say Pathfinder.
The Altima's slightly longer.
Ugh.
That's a weird thing about sedans. Is that crossovers, though they are large,
yeah,
do not have especially large footprints.
Yeah.
They tend to rise.
That's actually really surprising to me.
Yeah.
Hmm. Okay.
Actually, you know what? I got it wrong here. This is the exception to that rule.
Yay!
I keep looking at these numbers. You were right. Yeah. The Pathfinder is 198 inches long. The Altima is 192. Typically, in these cases, and it's going to come up again.
So,
hint. Yeah. So, you have a point.
Okay.
You got the first one of the year.
I got my first point.
And I made my first quiz mistake of the year.
Whee!
This is an exciting episode.
It is an exciting episode.
Right.
And you don't get to use your favorite phrase.
No.
Mm-mm.
In a similar vein, 2025 BMW 5 Series, that's their sedan,
mm-hmm.
or the BMW X5 crossover, which is a delightful vehicle. And it sells way better than a luxury crossover should.
Yeah, I don't remember the last time I drove the X5.
It's so good. It's so good. Sometimes we forget that BMW is so good.
Yeah. So I will say, if I take your hint correctly, I will say the 5 Series is going to be longer than the X5.
Yeah, considerably, actually. The 5 Series sedan is bigger than you'd think, 199 inches long.
Yeah.
And the X5 crossover, 194. You have 2 points.
Woohoo. Well, you know, so I will say, I play this game on Instagram.
Uh-huh.
Where, like, when I get these large full-size SUVs or trucks or whatever, I'll play the Will It Fit game. Will it fit in my garage? And, you know, I'll take pictures of it in front of my garage, and then, you know, I open it up to people, and I say, make a guess. And there are times when, like, I'll have plenty of room pulling in a full-size SUV, and I don't even think to play the game with a full-size sedan, and I have problems fitting that in my garage.
Here's just an interesting fun fact. The Chevrolet Tahoe, full-size SUV body on frame,
mm-hmm.
is shorter than the Chevrolet Traverse, which is their three-row crossover. By the way, you're driving the Traverse.
I am.
Yeah. I want to drive that. Not yours, because I haven't signed up for it, but I just want to drive that vehicle. I'm hearing very good things about it, except for the engine.
Yeah, it was really funny. I probably shouldn't share this, but I'm going to anyway. The guy who dropped the vehicle off today, he was like, this is a really comfortable vehicle, but the engine is kind of anemic.
Disappointing.
And now that I've heard the word anemic, like, I can't unhear that. And so, like, any review I do is probably going to have the word anemic in it.
On paper, that engine is not anemic.
Right.
On paper, that engine is not iron deficient.
No.
But obviously, there's some turbo lag there. Because they went from a very nice 3.6 liter V6 to this new 2.4 liter engine, which is exactly what Toyota did, by the way.
It's not even the turbo lag. It's just like, I find this
disappointing.
Yeah.
General Motors has been doing such good powertrain stuff for a while now.
Yeah.
Like, it makes the three-cylinder engines in the Trax, mm-hmm. and in the Invista work.
Yeah.
Really
it
well.
It does.
And they get great mileage working.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I digress.
Yeah, we digress.
Yeah, we have 8 minutes, and then you have a topic you still want to talk about. Let me just plan the show out loud while we're doing the show.
Okay, yeah.
2025 Honda Accord versus 2025 Honda Odyssey. The Accord, the amazingly still popular midsize sedan, and one of the best cars you can buy in America. The Odyssey, a very good minivan.
I'm going to say the Odyssey is longer.
It is, by a lot. 205 inches versus the Accord for 196. Well, your first, do you have a sweep going on? You got three?
I won.
This one is tough.
Okay.
Tesla Model 3, Tesla Model Y. Model 3, they're compact-y sedan.
I know they're built on the same platform.
Yeah, they are. Model Y, a small, and they call it a crossover.
I'm going to say Model Y.
Slightly.
Yeah, I was going to say, I would say they're nearly identical, but Model Y.
I got to be honest, at any distance, I can't tell these two vehicles apart.
Yeah.
But the Model Y, 187 inches, and the Model 3, 186. By the way, I know two people who own Model Ys, and they love them.
Yeah, same. I have a friend who owns one and loves it as well.
And they have not had problems.
Yeah.
So, all right. Are you ready for this one?
Yep.
All right. The Ford Bronco Sport or your average adult Lake Sturgeon?
I don't even know what a Lake Sturgeon is.
A very big fish.
A very big fish.
You don't know what a sturgeon is?
No.
Monstrous. Well, they get monstrous.
Okay.
If you walk into a bar somewhere in northern Minnesota, there's probably like some horrifying shellac-covered relic of a sturgeon glued to the wall.
Does it sing?
What do they call that? Taxidermy.
Oh, yeah.
No, they don't sing.
Darn. I've seen singing
if they do,
fish.
It's a sad, sad song.
I've seen singing fish on walls before.
Yeah, that's not.
I'm going to go with a Ford Bronco Sport.
Yeah, the average Ford Bronco Sport, 173 inches long. The average adult lake sturgeon, despite stories about 8-foot-long sturgeons, is about 2.2 meters long. 87 inches.
Okay.
They do get huge.
Okay.
But they're not huge, huge.
They're
so
not huge.
You are 5 for 5.
All right.
All right. And very conventional bonus question today.
Is it about a Hallmark Channel movie?
No, it's about candy.
Not my forte, but
no,
okay.
You're going to like this one. According to candyretailer.com, which sounds official, but poking around the site, it seems a little cheesy.
Okay.
And I don't know how they have 2024 numbers yet. Because what is today? The 5th? The 6th? Whatever.
6th.
Yeah, I don't think they have numbers yet. But anyway, according to candyretailer.com, the best-selling candy, it said candy bar, but these aren't all bars. The best-selling candy bar of 2024 was the Snickers bar. No surprise there.
Okay.
What is the second most best-selling?
Okay.
Are you ready?
Okay.
M&M's, Hershey bars, Kit Kat bars, or Reese's peanut butter cups?
Reese's peanut butter cups. That was what was in my head, was Reese's peanut butter cups. Had to be number two.
You're right. All right. I'm just like,
I am not even going to like flinch on that. I was just like, what would I think is number two? Reese's peanut butter cups.
I wanted to put like the Zagnut bar on here or the Marathon bar. Mm-hmm. Just things that people probably don't remember.
You know what I really liked when I was eating candy? The Nutrageous bar.
I hardly remember Nutrageous.
Oh my gosh.
That was a Hershey product.
I have no idea. It had like caramel and chocolate and peanut butter and peanuts and all the good things.
I am handing you this, and you haven't made a donut decision yet.
No, none of them are really thrilling me.
Oh, we've got a cherry turnover.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's peanut butter and a German chocolate.
Okay, so maybe I'll go with the peanut butter.
All right. You had something you wanted to talk about. You have 3 minutes.
I've got 3 minutes. Go.
I feel weird. I don't have notes in front of me.
So I just wanted to talk about a recall that was released at the end of December, and that is on the Ford Super Duty pickup trucks. And it's for all of the diesel models, 20 to 22.
That big diesel we were just talking about earlier.
And while there is like a very pragmatic thing that's wrong, the fuel pump is failing. The reason the fuel pump is failing, Ford is blaming on COVID.
A couple of things. The fuel pump's super expensive on these vehicles.
Yeah.
Lubricated by the fuel, which is an interesting thing I just learned. So I'm going to keep saying it because it sounds like something someone who's well-informed would know.
Okay.
But what's the deal? How is COVID the fault?
Well, essentially, so these trucks all have that Bosch CP4 fuel pump.
Yeah, and that thing. Sure.
That thing.
I've got one on my desk.
Yeah, you're just sitting there, right?
Yeah.
I have a Ford Mustang GT350 rotor sitting on my desk, so.
What does that weigh?
I don't know.
Is that ceramic?
No, I think it's probably fake, actually. Oh. It's turned into a card holder. But at any rate, I digress.
Like 2 minutes.
So 2 minutes. Yeah. Essentially, you know, this fuel pump, we started reporting on this at pickuptrucktalk.com in 2023 because Ram and Stellantis vehicles were having problems with the fuel pump in their diesel vehicles. And
it's the same fuel pump?
And it's the same fuel
Interesting.
Pump.
Interesting. Okay.
And so they issued a recall. And at about that time, NHTSA started to reach out to Ford and say, hey, based on these other recalls that are happening, do you want to put a recall on your fuel pump? And they're like, nope. But they were kind of monitoring the situation, looking at warranty work done. And it kind of reached a critical mass in December where they were like, okay, there's something going on. There's more like warranty work that we're doing than whatever. And so they came to the conclusion. I was looking at, there's like a chronology report on the NHTSA.com or gov. And they were saying because vehicles were stationary during COVID, this, you know, old diesel fuel gummed up the fuel pump and that was the problem.
That could be the problem. Diesel fuel is really high quality now. Mm-hmm. In the 80s when General Motors had all those diesel issues, there was a lot of paraffin in the fuel, which caused a lot of trouble. But fuel pumps are expensive, and they are lubricated by the fuel. And it's possible that what Ford is saying is true, but it's also not something that should happen. like you can't park your car because you went to Europe on business for 6 months and then expected to work when
but
it comes back.
You have
back.
To think about, like, the people weren't driving these vehicles for maybe yeah. as much as they should have been for years. So
yeah, but that should be a condition that a consumer should be able to indulge in.
Yeah, but at any rate, it's interesting. Yeah, and so interesting. I wonder what effect this will have on some of the lawsuits that are going on with General Motors vehicles and things like that. Yeah. So
here's the thing about that, too. Those fuel pumps are super expensive. As a consumer, you want to make sure this is covered.
Yes, and Ford is updating they're actually doing an over-the-air update to fix the problem.
Really?
Yeah, I'm sending you an article.
We'll have to talk more about
that
later.
You got to go to pickuptrucktalk.com.
All right, big thanks to Mike Quincy of Consumer Reports for joining us today. Thanks to producer Randy and the good folks here at TalkZone. Thank you, Jill.
Thank you.
Let's talk more about cars again.
Next week.
Remember to check us out at consumerguide.com.
The Car Stuff Podcast is produced by J-Turn Media.
To advertise on the show, please drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.